You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume Number 100 by Rudolf Steiner, two lecture cycles put together. It is entitled, the book is True Knowledge of the Christ, and I'm reading the first cycle called Theosophy and Rosicrucianism, which I believe is 14 lectures, translated by Anna Moyes. Lecture 4, given in Kassel on the 19th of June, 1907. Our task today is to go on following the destinies of human beings through the spiritual world. It will be good, therefore, to form an idea first as to what we actually call a world in spiritual scientific terms. Sentience of the world around us depends on our own abilities and organs of perception. If we had different organs, the world, too, would be completely different for us. If people did not have eyes, for instance, to see the light, but an organ with which they could perceive, say, electricity, you would not see this hall filled with light, but you would see the electricity flowing through the wires in the hall. You would see it flash, spark, and flow everywhere. The world we call ours is therefore dependent on our sense organs. The astral world, too, is nothing but a sum of phenomena which human beings experience around them when it has separated from the physical and ether body, and when they use its powers inwardly to see things we are otherwise not able to see. That is indeed the case when we have cast off the physical body and ether body. The organs for perceiving the astral world are those of the astral body, analogous to the sense organs for the physical body. Let us take a look at the astral world. Seers can perceive this astral world whilst still here in their physical body by using a method which we'll consider later. This astral world differs quite considerably from the physical world. You can get a first idea of what is around you in the astral world if you call up the last remnant people still have of the clairvoyance of earlier times, and that is their dream life. All of you know this dream life from personal experience, know it as a world of chaotic images. So why is it that people do dream? We know that during this dream life, the physical and ether body lies in the bed, with the astral body floating above it. The astral body is fully outside the ether body, in full, deep, dreamless sleep. In dreaming sleep, astral body tendrils remain in the ether body. And because of this, the individual then perceives the more or less chaotic images of the astral world. The astral world is as porous as dream images are. It is as if woven from dreams. But these dreams differ from ordinary dreams in that the images are something real as the physical world. The way we perceive them is very much like the way we perceive dreams, for it is also symbolic. Anything of the outside world which has been taken up into sleep is symbolized in the dream. Let me give you some typical examples of dreams, and you will immediately see how the dream becomes symbol, based on a simple impression from outside. You may see yourself catching a frog in your dream. You really feel the slithery frog as you wake up. On waking, you find that you have a cold bit of the bedsheet in your hand. Or you may dream you are in a dim cellar full of cobwebs. You wake up and have a headache. Or you see snakes in your dream, and when you wake up, you find you have a pain in your gut. or an academic dream's a long saga of a duel, starting from being jostled and all the way to the challenge to pistols, a shot, and he wakes up to find that the chair has fallen over. You will also see, from the whole way this last dream image went, that the relationship to time is very different. It is not only that time is made to go back, as it were, but also that, in the dream experience, the whole notion of time loses significance. In the fraction of a second, you dream a whole life. Just as the whole of our life passes before the mind's eye the moment before we fall off a cliff or drown. The most important point with all these dream images is, however, that they present images relating to whatever triggered the dream. That is how it generally is in the astral world. And we have cause to interpret these images. The same astral experience will always present as the same image. This shows utter regularity and harmony. The usual kind of dream images, on the other hand, are chaotic. Ultimately, one can find one's way about in the astral world just as one does in the world perceived through the senses. The astral world is a tissue of nothing but such images. But the images reflect soul entities. After their death, human beings are themselves enveloped in such images, some of them very rich in color and shape. And when people go to sleep, their astral bodies present in flowing, changing shapes and colors. All astral spirits appear in colors. Someone with astral vision perceives these astral spirits in a flowing sea of colors. The astral world has one feature that may seem strange to someone who hears of it for the first time. Everything in the astral world is like a mirror image, and as a pupil you will gradually have to get used to seeing things in the right way. You will, for example, see the figure 365, and that means 563. It is like this with everything you perceive in the astral world. Everything coming from me, for example, appears to be coming toward me. It is of extraordinary importance to take this into account. For when such astral images arise, perhaps because of morbid conditions, one has to know how to rate them. Images of this kind frequently arise in delirium, and the people involved may see all kinds of distorted faces and forms coming toward them. For in pathological states of this kind, the astral world is open to them. These images do, of course, look as if things were rushing toward people, though the truth is that they go out from them. Future physicians will need to know this, for with religious longing suppressed, they will be more and more common in future. The theme of the well-known painting titled The Temptation of Saint Anthony is based on such an experience of astral images. If you think it all through right to the end, it will no longer seem quaint to you that time, too, is inverted in the astral world. You get a sense of it from things learned in dreams. Remember the example of the duel just now? There, everything went in reverse, including time. In astral experience, you may, for instance, have the fruit on a tree first, then the blossom, and all the way back to the seed. After death and the time of freeing yourself from habits, the whole astral world goes in reverse, and you then go through your whole life once more in reverse order, concluding with the first impressions gained in childhood. It takes much less time than it did here in the physical world, about a third the length of your life on earth. You will also experience some other things when going through your life in reverse. Let us assume you died at 80 years of age and are now going back through life to your 40th year. At that time you slapped someone's face, let us say, so that the other person suffered pain caused by you at that time. in the astral world, this sensation of pain, will also be in a kind of mirror image, which means that you are now feeling the pain which the other person suffered at that time because of the slap. The same does, of course, also hold true for all joyful occasions. It is only when human beings have gone through their whole life that they will enter into the heavenly world. Religious documents are always truths to be taken literally. Considering what I have just been saying, you will immediately see that human beings can truly only enter into the spiritual world, meaning the kingdom of heaven of the Bible, when they have lived through the whole of their life in reverse, back to their childhood. This truly is what is behind the words of the Christ, quote, "Unless you become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven." Close quote. For when human beings have gone back again to their childhood stage, they take off their astral body and enter into the spiritual world. I must now tell you of the spiritual world in a narrative way. This realm of the heavens differs even more from the physical world than the astral world does. One is, of course, only able to describe everything using the terms that belong to this physical world, and it holds true, even more than it did with the astral world, that all these descriptions must be taken as mere analogies. The realm of the heavens is also tripartite, as is life on earth. Here we have the three states of aggregation, solid, liquid, and aeriform, accordingly distinguishing continents, oceans, and the atmosphere. In spirit land, we may also distinguish three such spheres, though only as analogues, except that the sphere of the continents is made up of something other than our rocks and stones. The solid ground in spirit land consists in the archetypes of all things physical. Everything physical has its archetype, including the human being. To the seer, these archetypes look like a kind of negative. That is, you see the space as a kind of shadow figure with radiant light all around it. This shadow, corresponding to blood and nerves, for instance, is not uniform, however. A stone or a mineral makes a uniformly empty space appear in the archetype, also with light rays around it. Whereas you walk on solid rock when on earth, you are there walking on the archetypes of physical things. The land of this spiritual world is made up like this. When human beings first enter it, they always see one particular thing. It is the moment when they see the archetype of their own physical body. They clearly see their own body lying there, for they are spirit themselves. If the life on earth had taken a normal course, this will be about 30 years after death, the basic sentience is, quote, "That is you," close quote. Knowing this, tat tvam asi, this you are, became a fundamental statement in Vedanta philosophy. All such terms have come from deep down sources of spiritual insight. The second sphere in the spiritual land are the oceans. Everything which is life here in the physical world, that is, everything which has an ether body, is like a flowing element in spirit land. Flowing life streams through spirit land. It also collects, like in an oceanic basin, like the water in the sea, or better, like the blood that flows through the veins and collects in the heart. Thirdly, we have the atmospheric part of spirit land, made up of all passions, drives, feelings, and so on. All this is outwardly perceptible there, like the atmospheric phenomena here on earth. All this roars through the atmosphere of Devakan. As a seer, you can therefore perceive in spirit land the suffering that takes place here on earth and the joys that we know there. That we know here. Every passion, all hatred and the like, is like a gale in spirit land, a battle, for instance, produces the effect that the seer experiences a thunderstorm in the Devakan world. The whole spiritual realm is full both of wonderful joys moving along and of dreadful passions. We may therefore also speak of spiritual ears. When you have advanced so far that you have gained insight into this Devakan world, these moving, billowing phenomena can be seen and heard, and what you hear is the harmony of the spheres. We have now characterized the spiritual sphere up to this level, but there is still another, a fourth sphere in Devakan. So far we have seen the archetypes of all physical forms equals the continent, all life equals the ocean, all inner life, feelings, and so on equals the atmosphere, and all of those together are of Devakan. Now there is one thing in human life that cannot have its basis in the outside world. Its spiritual content makes up the fourth sphere of Devakan. Every original idea is part of this, all the way to the creative impulses of genius. Anything original, that is, everything human beings create in this world to enrich it, all these archetypes make up the fourth sphere of Devakan. This brings our description of the lower parts of Devakan to a conclusion. Beyond this are three more regions. But during their life here, human beings need higher initiation to reach these. After death, too, they are only perceptible to more highly developed individuals. When such an advanced initiate is able to enter into the next higher sphere of Devakan, what does he find there? Initially, something which in occult science is called the Akashic Record. Everything that happens and has ever happened in the world leaves its imprint in a subtle form of matter that is imperishable. Let me give you an example to help make this clearer. I am now speaking to you, but you would not hear me if my voice were not able to create waves in the air. These movement forms will, of course, pass away. But when we come to that higher world, everything leaves an impression in that subtle, spiritual form of matter and remains there forever. Every word, every thought, everything that has ever happened in humanity can be read in this Akashic Record. It needs either initiation or that moment when human beings enter Devakan after death, that is, when they have developed so far that after death they are able to perceive this region of Devakan, which certainly is most elevated. They are then able to look into the past. This Akashic Record is a place where everything is kept that has ever happened. It is not a written record in the physical sense, but takes the form of images. You see Caesar in every situation in his life, for example, not the things he actually did, but the inner impulses that guided his actions. These Akashic images have great vitality, and if one does not know how to interpret them, they can make one fall into serious error. They are therefore the source of many spiritualist aberrations. That is when an Akashic image appears in the seances. If you quote Goethe, for instance, and the answer is given to a question, that answer is given the way Goethe would have given it if he had been asked that question on 25 November 1797. You have to know the spiritual world really well to see if this is something real in such a case, or a phantom. Descriptions like this give you an idea as to what these higher regions of the spiritual world are like. The first thing is, therefore, that one perceives one's own body. All other things have their origin in this. The individual then feels great relief at being free of the bodily shells. But this is the joyful moment when they have laid aside the last of the corpses, which is the astral corpse. A plant held in the confinement of a narrow rock cleft would feel liberated to be freed from it. And that is the basic sentience, the joy felt by human beings at that point. This happiness penetrates and transfigures all feelings, which earlier had been more earthly. Those of friendship, for instance, which may have gone through certain changes here on earth and are deepened and purified in yonder world. A mother's love for her child also goes through this purification. And conversely, the original animal feeling of being connected, which becomes a moral feeling here, unfolds to even greater moral power in Devakan. All bonds formed here on earth are deepened in the spiritual region, interpenetrating one another. Through love, human beings rise, whilst still on earth, from the narrowness of self-seeking to the all-encompassing world experience. Yonder, however, nothing is shut off, separated from anything else. One works for the other, for there, too, work is the element that sustains and helps souls, bringing them together with love, the inexhaustible source spring of all life. The end of Lecture 4.